My name is James Weeks and welcome to Sacred Journey Worldwide. In the first episode, we spoke to anthropologist and author Daniel Nettle, the author of the pioneering book Vanishing Voices, The Extinction of the World's Languages. In this episode, we'll be turning our attention to the Yoruba language and its significance on the sacred journey. My guest today is Chief Awo Aikulola. He's the chief priest of the Asafori Tifa Temple, and he's also an initiated Ifa priest and Babalawo who has lived among the Yorubas. He speaks the Yoruba language fluently and often serves as an ambassador to the culture. Welcome to Sacred Journey Worldwide, Chief.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, glad to have you. You know, Chief, scholars are saying, linguists are saying that at least half of the world's languages will die by the turn of the century. And when these languages die, the world will lose priceless information, priceless data in practically every field imaginable, from botany to linguistics to medicine. They're saying this because all of the knowledge of humanity are encoded in language. And you are somewhat of an oddity, in a sense. You're one of the very, very few people in the Western Hemisphere who practice the Yoruba philosophy or the Yoruba traditions, who actually speak the language, not just speak the language, who have actually mastered the language. And you have always maintained that the language is the philosophy and the language tells us everything we wish to know about the language. And I'm hoping that you can elaborate on this. Could you please elaborate on this?
Sure, it'll be a pleasure. Yoruba language, first of all, it's a very broad language with close to 30 dialects. And each of those dialects, although sometimes they're mutually intelligible, at other times they're not. So we're talking about Yoruba language. It's like a very deep well and with many different levels. And one of the best ways in which we can study the language and even the dialects is through the literature of the Yoruba people, especially religious literature, whether it be the verses of Odu Ifa or of the Odu of Erindi Logun, which is 16 cowries, as well as the Oriki for various deities, as well as objects, food items, etc. And they give us a little glimpse and into, let's say we're speaking of deities, they'll mention the likes and dislikes of each of the Irumal, each of the Urisha. I'll give you an example. When we're reciting Obatala poetry, which is known as Usakwikwe, we have different,
For those who might be joining us who are not that familiar with the Yoruba philosophy, could you say who Obatala is or what he represents?
Sure. Obatala is a creator deity. He was the deity in charge and still is in molding human beings. And presently, Obatala is in charge spiritually in helping to mold the new child, the infant, in the mother's womb. He's also a deity that is considered elder and the king or father of the deity, so he has a large eldership or seniority, role of seniority within the pantheon of deities. He's a deity that loves white iconography, including white cloth, white metal bangles, white beads, etc. So he also represents cleanliness, purity, order, as well as the power of the spoken word. Obatala is known as Alabalase, the one who owns the wish and also makes it manifest. So people seeking to make their wishes become manifest or realized also pray to Obatala for their wishes to become reality. And Usakwikwe is basically the extended version of his Uriki. Uriki are praise names that are recited in order to lend or praise the outstanding good qualities of any being, whether it be a person or a spirit or even objects. And Usakwikwe, as it's the longer form or extended form of the praise poetry, it's recited in a melodic fashion. I'll give you an example of some Usapique, and then I'll also show you what I mean by how Usapique lends some information with regards to that deity. Ire mama nin belenu mama o. Ire kolobo nin belenu lakose. Iya wife kule kubo. Iya wifolu yaya sadota ninuko. Ire wo kokeke baba rubo. Abi ama oko gele usun. Oba talama kon lenu re. Unle ola baba kulodi. Unle oju opopo baba rugbo itana we ti gbele olodumare eni ti olodumare n fi se omoran o sa olufan wa bani se awoyo le dase abuni ti fin kun towo eni agba lowo eni oni feni ti oni o sa olufan magbare owo mi feni kan. Ire mo wa wa, ire mo wa toro, ire die tin be lodo oba tala oba rere ti gbele ifan. Ogunji mi wa ba n waye kaye mi. That's just one segment of Usapique, the Obatala praise poetry that's recited. In this aspect, we recite it when a devotee is making prayer to their item of sacrifice and in front of the deity shrine. And you heard mention of Osaulufan. Osaulufan is an avatar or an expression of Obatala, especially from Ifan town, which exists in the state of Osun in Nigeria. Other avatars of Obatala include Orisha Ogiyan, as well as Orisha Jagema, Orisha Popo, Orisha Kire, etc. And some of those also made mention of in the diaspora as well. When speaking about Orisha Ogiyan is the Obatala, or the way in which Obatala is worshipped in the town of Ejigbo. And the town of Ejigbo, the king is known as the Ogiyan of Ejigbo. So when we say Orisha Ogiyan, we say that it is the deity of the king of Ejigbo. And some of his poetry, it starts off by saying, Orisha Ogiyan Elegbo, Iyan Jagun Jagun Je Ki Jeko, which means, Orisha Ogiyan Elegbo, it is pounded yam that the warrior eats, and he doesn't eat Eko. Eko is like corn pap made from fermented cornstarch. So right away we know that Orisha Ogiyan's main food is pounded yam, Iyan. That's one of his likes. Another part of Usapique mentions the use of egun in the town of Ifan. And egun is a very short alcoholic drink that's also mixed with some item of sacrifice. And when that drink is taken in by some of the devotees, it makes them, kind of pushes them over the edge into trance with the deity. There's another area I'll recite of Usapique, so I can get to that section. Erio, ejita balare o, ojuro ngbe o, alase o gamule ruru, usa ulufan ni daudu obatala, a ori daudu tin beluru jiyan, a ori daudu tin fi gbegiri jeka, a ori daudu tin fi lakpata jeko tin fi yangan san yangan, mbaba o dare mare o, mbaba o defon ma fun o legumu. That last area mentioned that once I arrive at Ifan, I will give you egun to drink. Egun is that special drink that pushes devotees over the edge to fall into possession or into trance with Obatala, the spirit of Obatala. These are just some examples.
Sure. Many people who study the philosophy in so many ways don't consider, at least here in the West, don't consider the language to be relevant at all. What would you say to that?
Well, everyone has different perspectives and reasons why they have that perspective. Obviously, for you and myself, we've been to Yoruba land. We've also intermingled with priests and Orisha community, both here in the diaspora as well as in the continent, in Yoruba land, where it is the source of Odisha throughout the world. So most of these folks that mention that it's not very relevant or not as important, maybe it's because they themselves have not ventured out to another part of the world where Odisha is practiced, especially not in Yoruba land. Part of our training as priests in Yoruba land is, in fact, training in literature. So without knowledge of the language, the literature becomes much more of a, let's say, a mountain to climb. It becomes more difficult. And within the literature, although we don't have a very dogmatic tradition, not too dogmatic, not something like a finite Bible or Quran or Torah where we know it has so many pages, so many verses, etc., we have 256 Urdu of Ifa. But within those Urdu Ifa, we have incountable, infinite number of verses. But each of those verses lends a teaching. And it's only in the language that you're able to decipher the correct interpretation. Once you change the language, there's some concepts that are not readily available in the Western Hemisphere. I'll use an example, William Boscombe's book, 16 Cowries. It's an excellent book, and he recorded many verses of one priest, Alako, from Ghana, I believe. He was an Obatala priest. Matter of fact, his Obatala was Usaulufa. And when reading the book, I noticed a lot of misinterpretation based upon the language. First of all, William Boscombe, I don't believe he was a fluent speaker of the language. But even if he was, there were still many misinterpretations within the verse itself. And it's not to take away from his work at all. But when you have that knowledge of the language, you can be able to correct or be able to know what the original intention was. For example, people in the West, we don't eat eko. Eko is a Yoruba food. And when you eat eko, you have to kind of curl your fingers to break off the morsels of the that starch, that carbohydrate. So when reading a verse that mentions, let's say, the curls, the fingers curl as if taking a piece of eko, many people may not understand what that implies. You know, although it may simply be a metaphor, but first of all, there's the lack of understanding of what is echo, how is echo yin. But if you're immersed in a language and in the culture, you're able to immediately understand exactly what kind of impression it's supposed to lend.
Tell us about the time that you spent living among the Yorubas in Southwest Nigeria. What are some of the key insights that you would say that you've learned along the way? Okay.
Well, I've been traveling yearly to Yoruba land, to Nigeria, since 1998. And I usually go at least once or twice a year. And usually when I go, I spend a minimum of 1 month or 6 weeks or even up to 3 months, as much as, you know, finances can allow. It's been a big sacrifice, but I've been doing it out of the passion and all the immense learning that I've gained, being right at the source of Yoruba spiritual and cultural traditions. Again, language has been one of the most important things that I've learned. And as a matter of fact, I chose to get initiated and trained in West Africa because I have realized at an early age how the language played such a major role in cultural retention. And so what I've learned is that through use of language, we're able to get a more complete picture of so many areas of Yoruba belief, as well as how people live their daily lives, their worldview, etc. I've also learned that, you know, the literature, there's so many different art forms. The literature itself is an art form, and the way in which we recite it is melodic. And the literature lends itself as a mnemonic device to help you to retain the information. So they, you know, it's a very advanced oral tradition where they train people to recite and for entertainment purposes, as well as invocation of the deities, but also as a way to strengthen your mind and be able to retain concepts. And I've learned that delving into the language has helped me to, you know, learn all the literature much faster. And able to, it's allowed me to be able to learn a lot quicker. So I think that's one of the keys that a lot of people are missing out, that if they want to learn this tradition, especially from a West African perspective, I think the language is one of the first areas that need to be tackled or delved into so that that person's training can be sped up. Or so, because we have a lot of catching up to do. If we're born here in the West, we're not immersed in that culture. We weren't born there, so we have to kind of speed up the process in order to get to standard.
Okay, and as an instructor of the language, what are some of the challenges and frustrations you have experienced along the way? And what would be your advice to people, you know, who are serious about learning the language?
Okay, well, some of the challenges I've had is lack of commitment and continuity. Language is not something you can learn overnight, and some people get frustrated. And another thing I see is that since Yoruba language is a tonal language, people are not used to changing them, replicating tone patterns. And although a lot of people may come from a musical background, it still becomes a challenge. I don't know exactly why. But in our speech in English or even other languages such as Spanish, it doesn't have a tonal quality necessarily, even though some languages are kind of melodic. But with tonal languages, you change the tone, you change the meaning entirely. Or you may be saying something nonsensical. So it's important to, I think, for people to really try to work a lot on their tone. And it can be a tedious task, but it can also be a lot of fun. It can be enjoyable if people are given nice exercises and even literature, songs. They can see how the tone plays a role, and it keeps them also, it keeps it fresh and not something that's like a chore. As well as working with people of different language backgrounds, I work with people that speak Spanish, I work with people that speak English, and I work with people that speak Portuguese now. So each of their own languages have sounds that don't necessarily exist in Yoruba language, and also Yoruba language has sounds or consonants or vowels that don't exist in these other languages, English, Spanish, or Portuguese. So trying to get those out of the way, the more difficult consonants as well as tones out of the way, helps people to speed up the general understanding and even vocalization of the language. But once a person can hear the language, that's pretty much, they've already laid the foundation. So that's a positive thing. If they can start to understand what some others are saying, then they already have the mechanics in their brain that they can work with. So I definitely tell people to try to work out the harder aspects. Don't leave them for last. Leave them, you know, try to work with them now and mix it up. Change constantly different concepts of the language, grammar, so that people can be continually interested. And people should take advantage of all the resources that are available nowadays, so much. There's CD-ROMs, there's textbooks, there's plenty of Yoruba music directly from Nigeria, whether it be religious music or secular music. There's Yoruba language speakers all over the place. There's places, although maybe not always set in a university setting, but there are places and individuals or groups that are trying to offer Yoruba language. People have to take advantage of it, because another problem that I've experienced is that if there's not enough students, sometimes universities won't be able to maintain their quota. So a lot of times these programs that start off beautifully, they quickly dissipate. So there has to be some sort of commitment coming from the students themselves. Unfortunately, since we're not in a community that's necessarily bilingual in terms of Yoruba English, and most Yoruba people speak English, so it's not always like a requirement or something that they need to do unless they're in a liturgical setting. But that's some of what I recommend to folks, that they need to maintain continuity and try to use it amongst each other and as much as possible.
Well, thank you, Chief Aikulola, for joining us today.
Your
insights have been enlightening to me, and we hope to have you back on in the near future to discuss other areas of this tradition that I'm certain that you could shed some light on. So thank you again.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
My name is James Weeks, and we've been talking to Chief Aikulola Iwindara, an initiated Ifa priest and a Yoruba language instructor. And he's been sharing some of his key insights into the Yoruba language and its importance on the sacred journey. Thank you for joining us.